sing with me, Aaron. Come on.
And if your Nigel says he's happy, he must be happy. He must be happy. He must be happy in his world.
It's a great song, isn't it?
Wonderful singing song.
Yeah, I know. I got a shitty voice.
No, you have a good voice.
Really? You think so? You're the only one.
You're not like amazing, but you're pretty good.
Oh, you're the one that thinks I sing good. Oh.
Yeah, I'm the one.
How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good, Carl. You know, I was looking at the off-topic link on RX Muscle, and, you know, I'm not sure how many people are actually listening live tonight because it still says Wednesday instead of today being Tuesday. So we might have a light listener load, but people will be surprised and excited to hear maybe that it'll be available for download tonight on Tuesday.
Yeah, there you go. That'll be a new one. And the reason we had to do this was a last minute thing because I'm traveling the end of the week again, so I have to disrupt the show's schedule. Sorry about that.
No, it's no big deal. No big deal. As long as we know early enough, it's no big deal.
Weren't we supposed to have J.M. Mannion on this show?
We were supposed to have J.M. You know, to be honest with you, I didn't. After the Olympia, I thought I'd give him a week.
Yeah.
An extra week to have him on. But he'll definitely be on in the very near future.
Everybody is like, that I'm trying to reach this week for one reason or another. They're like, nah, we're still recovering from the Olympia. And I'm like, what are you recovering from?
Yeah, you didn't. I'm still recovering from the Olympia. I told you earlier that, what were you going to say?
No, you're all dried out from it, right?
Yeah, when I go to Vegas, this is the same thing happened when I went to Arizona, to Phoenix, you know, last year, I guess it was this year in February, to see you and to the Phoenix Pro Show, which incidentally, I don't believe they'll be having next year, unfortunately.
Really? I wonder why Stryker Solomon is not going to do it?
I don't think Stryker Solomon got the okay to do another one.
So, in other words, what you're saying is Stryker Solomon got struck out?
Quite possibly, yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
Do you remember seeing him go on stage and give his little speech on stage there?
No, I don't remember that, but I remember him. He's a little dude.
Well, he's a little big dude, yeah.
Well, yeah, he's a little big dude. You're right.
Yeah.
He's a little Napoleon dude.
It's not that easy being promoting a big pro contest, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I heard rumors he lost huge money, and that's what
Of course. I think that people don't realize that it's hard to make money doing a pro contest, especially your first year. Remember Tim Gardner came on, he does the Pro Bodybuilding Weekly Championships in Tampa.
Right.
He was saying it took years of losing money to start actually coming up in the black.
Right. Right.
So I think that the money didn't add up, and I guess he couldn't do it again, or something like that. But it won't be there anyway. I get all dried out, and while I was there in Vegas, you know, towards the end, my eyes started feeling all dry, and you know, I get my lips start getting chapped, and I always get this black, you know, like blood snot.
Ooh, let's not talk about that. Come on.
My blood snot?
Yeah, that's not.
That grosses you out. You want to talk about anal all the time. I talk about blood snot.
Well, anal is a sexual act. Blood snot is gross.
That's true. I guess you're right about that.
I mean, unless.
You talk about shitting stuff. I'm pretty good with some shitting stuff.
Nah, I'm not doing that anymore.
Oh, you're
right. I've elevated myself. And I know that you've gotten emails about that, too, from some of the
listeners. Yes, that's a good segue, Carl.
People are like, so what happened to the woman-hating, love doesn't exist, you're all a bunch of fools, Carl Lenore?
The bitter Carl Lenore.
The bitter Carl Lenore. I've been transformed by the love of a woman.
You're bitter, and you're also grosser.
Yeah, you're right.
You're less gross now, too.
I
think what it is you're worried that she's listening.
No, she listens.
Toning down the grossness.
No, she listens sometimes, but no, that's not it at all. I'm not angry. That's what it is. Because before I was angry and bitter, and so I looked forward to shocking people. And I don't have that anymore. I don't even have the need for it.
I wonder if you're going to be less fun now.
No, absolutely not. I'll still be all the same fun. It's just that I'm not going to be bitter and angry and hate women.
So that leads to an interesting question. The show that you've been talking about for a while that you're supposed to be starting, Open Season on Men, where we talk about... you talk about what women do to men these days in America. Is this show still going to happen?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's still going to happen. The show, first of all, Open Season on Men wasn't so much about what women do to men, but how men are treated by local governments and governments in general and society. I mean, we are treated as second-class citizens. And it's something that is promoted when we're children, really.
Right. But
think about it for a second. Everybody cries when Bambi is shot, but when the male deer is shot, it doesn't matter. You can shoot all the male deers you want. You got to get a special doe tag to kill a female deer. You know, it's always about men are expendable. And that's something that permeates our society. And I want to help change that. I want to change that. I really do. And
do you think the show will be as good now that there's no, like, vitriol against women?
Yes,
like
because, no, because, look, there are women out there who are predators. And there are women out there who are not. And the show is going to be insulting to the women who are predators, for sure.
Right.
But those women are the ones that they use the law, they use the judicial system to really basically abuse the men in their lives. I mean, I just had a conversation with somebody the other day, a good friend of mine, my friend Vinny. We grew up together, and the poor guy had a liver transplant. And he's on disability, and he's dependent on his wife to a great degree. You know, he had a problem with his liver, and they had to give him the transplant. And so, you know, he's not in the greatest shape anymore. And he's my age. He's like 52. And he and his wife went through a rough patch about 3 years ago. And it's obvious I understood what was going on. I mean, she's probably resentful that this is what her life has become, like caring for him, and he can't contribute, and she's got to help him and stuff like that. So she decided that she wanted out of the marriage. And I said to him, I says, Vinny, I said, this is what you need to do right away. You need to do this, 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 and that. I gave him some advice, and he didn't follow any of it. And I talked to him a couple days ago. She got an EPO against him. She said she's afraid of the guy. He's not able to fight. He can't, he has to worry about getting infections. I mean, he's not like somebody who's going to go, kick your ass. You know, he's like not in that gear, but she said that he called her over and over again. Well, he did call her over and over again because she won't show up in court and she won't sign the divorce papers. In Florida, you got to get both people have to sign the divorce papers.
Right.
And so he keeps calling her because he's like, sign the divorce papers. And so she went to court and said he stalked her because she kept calling him. And of course, the idiot judge, these judges are really the problem. Every judge should have an umbrella stuck up their ass and opened afterwards, as a step, like they that's part of the job. Like if you really want to be a judge, you have to have that happen first. That'll weed out a lot of the judges real fast. But this judge granted her an EPO. He should have said to her, "What's wrong with you? He's trying to get you into court to file to go through with the divorce that you want. Of course, he's calling you."
And so she, does the judge get to hear his side of the story before?
Sure, sure. He told him, I've been, Your Honor, I'm calling her because she won't sign the paperwork. I'm trying to get her to sign the paperwork. The judge doesn't care. He gives her a 1,000-foot EPO against him so he can have no contact with her at all, which stifles the process of getting divorced even more. I know I went through that. Now you can't talk to the person. Everything you do, you have to go through an attorney. It just costs more. And not in his case because he's on disability, but in my case, I have to pay for the attorney that I have to pay the attorney that's beating my ass. You know, it's like hiring your own hitman. Here, I want you to kill me. How much is it going to cost? You know, and so it's terrible. And I'll tell you the truth. I don't blame women for taking advantage of a corrupt system. You know, I mean, they it's out there and they're like, hey, I can do this. And the law provides, and everybody thinks that because the law backs something up that it's proper and it's appropriate, but laws have nothing to do with what is fair.
Right.
I mean, look at slavery. I can go back into that rant again, right? Okay.
Well, laws change from place to place. So
yeah.
Okay, one place is not okay someplace else.
Yeah, look at California. You can grow marijuana. You can smoke marijuana. You go across any of the borders surrounding California, you get arrested for that same marijuana.
Look at Canada. You can possess anabolic steroids there completely legally.
Right. So,
you know that?
Yes. Canada, Vermont, and Alaska.
Interestingly enough, there's a really big steroid bust in Canada.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
And apparently, like, if you were to get, I actually read this in Anthony Roberts' blog, is if you were going to get arrested, you were there when the bust happened to buy steroids, and you were actually there to buy stuff, and you had your juice, and the house got kicked in, they would arrest the guys taking the steroids or selling the steroids, but you would actually be able to take your steroids and leave.
That's funny.
Isn't that crazy?
I would be like, oh no, I bought 36 bottles, Your Honor, officer. those over there in that box, those are mine also. Be like lying through my teeth.
Right, exactly.
But you know, laws are screwed, and women have done a lot to fight for their rights for the past 50 years, and men have sat back, and we act like as though we have all the rights, and we don't have any rights anymore. I mean, you know, more men in prison, more men in institutions, more men addicted to drugs and alcohol, more men commit suicide, more women attempt suicide, but more men are successful at it and actually die from it. It's and that's what the show is going to be about. It's not going to be me railing against women, because
that's what it would have been about originally.
No, it wasn't. It was never going to be about that. I mean,
you got to admit the show that you will have now will not be the same as the show.
I will still rail against women who are abusing the system. I will still rail against them. And that's right. Who I was going to rail against before. So I will still do that. And I will rail against the system that promotes that, because that's money making for governments. Every time they get somebody to go to court, did I tell you the story about a friend of mine in Louisville who lost his job, was getting $900 a month in unemployment. He was supposed to give his wife $1,800 a month, including child support. He got 3 months behind because all he was making was $900 a month in unemployment. They threw him in jail for 6 months. They charged him $12 a day to be in jail for 6 months. When he got out, they said, now you owe not only the 3 months, but the 6 months you've been in jail, plus this money you owe the state for being in jail.
Yeah, and he was continuously being
put. And he was put back in jail again. I mean, what, now you have to think about this. You have to look at a local government that does something like that, you know that they don't care about the person, and they don't even care about the woman getting her money. It's about them putting people in jail, because every person they have in jail, they make money. It's disgusting. It's insidious. It's as corrupt as the slave trade, as like getting women and from Mexico, bringing them to Mexico and making them prostitutes. You know, what do they call that? Human trafficking.
Human traffic.
That, how is the, what that government is doing to that poor guy any different? He's never going to get out of, unless he finds a way to make $10,000 a month while he's in jail. He's never going to come out with the money that they need. So he's fucked for the rest of his fucking life.
Well, let's get back to, I don't want to use all your material for your show.
Don't worry, I got plenty more.
Let's get back to you got to admit, though, it's interesting to look back on, and you know what I really want to do? I need to go back and find some clips
of me railing against
a montage again of like different interesting clips of some of your more
prolific rants about love and love being bullshit.
I remember one where you were saying how you should not just don't start a relationship, just get a prostitute.
Yeah,
the prostitutes is much much easier and save you the trouble, and it ends up being cheaper in the long run.
Well, then let me say this. Think about this for a second. To such a miserable soul as I was, imagine that how special this woman is to have turned me around.
That's true.
I mean, it's amazing. I you're right. I would have never, ever thought that I could feel this way again. Again, this is the first time I've ever had this depth of love for anybody, but I would never have thought that I could feel this way after the way I felt in the past, you know, year and a half, 2 years.
One of the emails asked me, Carl, and I'll ask you this question. I didn't know how to respond to this gentleman. He wants to know if, for some reason, you know, God forbid, you and this girl don't work out. Something happens, it doesn't work out for one reason or another. Will the old Carl come back, or are you permanently?
No, he won't come back. He won't come back. No, because I think what I was, you know, life is like a pendulum. When something happens to you, sometimes you have to go very, very far to the opposite extreme in order to find your way back to the middle. And I think I was reacting to a terrible situation, an exploitive situation, a parasitic situation that was set up by the Kentucky judicial system in the way they handled my divorce. And I think that I'm past that now. I've made peace with it, and that's part of the reason I was open enough, I believe, to fall in love. Because I made peace with it. I thought, you know what? I'm looking at this like taxes. There's nothing I can do about it. And so what am I going to do? I got to roll on.
Right.
So no, I don't, I know I won't be that bitter asshole again. That bitter asshole was the result of 22 years of marriage, gone terribly, terribly, terribly wrong, and me being vilified. I was vilified.
Would you still advise me never to get married?
No, and I never advised you that either. Remember in private conversations when we were talking, when you and Amy first broke up, I said, Aaron, ultimately, no matter what anybody says, doesn't matter. If you want to work things out with her, you need to do that. Do you remember me saying that to you?
Yes, but you didn't, you told me before not to get married.
Not to get married?
Plenty of times you told me.
Well, I told you get a prenup before you get married.
Yeah,
I told my son the same thing. I said, I don't care
if you have to get married.
Yeah, I said if you end up wanting to get married or you have to get married, you know, for whatever reason, that you should look to a prenup to protect you financially from being exploited. And it's not because it's because the way the system is set up. The system is set up to exploit someone. And unfortunately, in most relationships, the man makes more money than the woman, and that's who gets exploited. The judicial system goes to whoever makes the most money, whoever can pay. That's right. Who they go after. So I did, and I told my son the same thing.
Don't have any money. You said even if you don't even have any money.
And that's right. I told my son the same thing. I told him recently. I said even if you're broke, you still have to have a prenup because things can change very quickly. And right. It's not about the problem is love and marriage are two separate things. I don't believe in marriage, and I'll tell you why. Two people can have a long-lasting, loving relationship that can thrive and blossom. But once you get married, you're not marrying that woman. You're marrying the government and that woman. Okay? You're not, you're getting a license for marriage. Oh, the government is involved now. Oh, wait a minute. Well, why do I need the government's involvement? Why do I need a license to be married? And think about that for a second. There's no need for marriage in order to have a loving, a deep, lasting relationship. Once you get married, you invite the government in. And you say, okay, we're going to get married, but we're going to get married based on these rules. And the rules are not fair. And it's not just men that get screwed. There's a lot of women out there that are breadwinners. I know a woman who owns an ad agency here in town who her husband cheated on her a couple times. She finally divorced him, and she's paying him alimony because she makes more money than him. So the bottom line is whoever the breadwinner is gets tagged in this situation. It shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think it'd be tough to convince a woman that I was potentially going to marry than not to go through that traditional means. But I guess if you could do it, it makes sense. You don't have to involve the government in your marriage relationship.
Yeah, why the fuck should the government have anything to do with a love affair?
No, I agree.
See, when the government you fall in love, right, and then you are in love. And you are motivated by love to do these things. And then all of a sudden you switch from being in love and being motivated by love to being in business to get, this becomes a business relationship. As soon as you fucking get married and that license is issued and the local government is going, okay, you're no longer driven by love. Now you're driven by these rules. This is a business relationship now.
So you and your girl will never get married. No way.
I doubt it because I don't think she wants to get married either. I think, you know, she's had a marriage. Well,
you can say for sure you'll never get married because you can say that you'll never.
I can't say it for sure because I don't want to say something and then look back later and say, wow, look how wrong I was. But I don't think, what I do feel is I don't think that marriage is necessary to have a long lasting loving relationship with somebody.
Couldn't explain that to her and make her agree with that? If that's how you believe.
She feels the same way.
Okay. All right.
So yeah. She feels the same way. So, I mean, you know, again, why invite the government?
What would change that?
Well, I guess if for some reason one of us felt strongly where we wanted to be married for some reason, you know, and we would explore it together then.
Okay. So you were talking about predators earlier, and it made me think about your ex-wife, Mrs. Lenore. You said she has been asking about your new girlfriend, huh?
She has asked who she is, yeah.
Yeah. And you think she's asking in a nice way? I mean, you think she's happy for you?
I don't know, and I don't care. I don't think about it that way. I mean, I just simply said that, you know, I'm not talking about that with you, and that was it.
Oh.
It's none of her business. I don't ask her who she's dating. You know, my daughter once started to tell me who my ex was dating. I says, Taylor, stop. I says, I don't even care. I don't
want
to know.
Well,
and
you
I don't
want
care.
Her to get, you want her to start dating.
Yes, I would like her to get married and move on. Absolutely. I would like her to go on and get married.
But then the $2,500 is null and void.
Yeah, you know, but I, you know, that's another story. A lot of women don't get married. What they do is they live with somebody and they keep taking the alimony too.
Oh.
Well, it's just another way that the system works, you know. You can live with somebody and not get married, and you can still get the alimony and work and make money, and they can, you know.
You are for marriage in your ex-wife's case.
I think she needs to get married, yeah. Actually, I hope she gets married next week.
If she's listening, I want to
help her husband buy the engagement ring. I'll chip in some money to buy the engagement ring, sure. I think she should get married.
That would be a great investment for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean, think about it for a second. $2,500 a month for 8 years is just under $250,000.
You get a really nice wedding ring.
Fuck.
Really, a really fantastic engagement present.
Yeah.
Hey, give me straight for the honeymoon. Hey, listen, you're going to get married, I'm sending you around the world.
Yeah. In a boat. In a rowboat. Take your time. Don't rush back. No, I think that for her, marriage is good, a good idea. I think that she, and I really think she wants to get married again. I believe she does, because I believe she believes that marriage is critical for a relationship.
Right. Well, let's hope for your sake that she does.
Yes,
right?
I hope. I want her, I hope all, I wish her all the happiness in the world, and a long and fruitful marriage. I do.
So you've recovered from the Olympia then, huh?
Yeah, I wasn't really. I did drink a lot one night. I mean, the night that we went out to El Molino's in Caesar's Palace, I had a really good bottle of wine. I had two Negronis before dinner. Do you know what a Negroni is?
Right.
It's a shot of Campari, a shot of gin, and a half a shot of sweet vermouth on the rocks with a splash of soda. It's kind of like
telling me that I need to try that, but I've never had.
You'll love it. You'll love it. It's a very, very good drink, and I want to popularize it the way Sex and the City popularized Cosmopolitans. I think everybody should start drinking Negronis and attribute it to me. But anyway, I had two Negronis before dinner, which is equivalent to having like three martinis, because there's a lot of alcohol in a Negroni.
This is why you didn't go to the after party.
I was too drunk. I didn't want to like engage anybody and have to walk into an after party and hang out. I just didn't want to do it. And the love of my life was interested in going, but I said, you know, is it okay if we don't? She said, that's fine. Because I had a bottle of wine with dinner. I had a huge snifter of Zambuca with some espresso. And then I had like two glasses of grappa. I mean, I had a lot of alcohol that night.
It sounds like a lot of alcohol.
And it took me about 2 days to recover from that.
And we didn't go to the gym at all.
No, I didn't.
No, I didn't even get to say that you look a lot better. You lost a considerable amount of body
fat. I look even better now. I'm using that Alpha T2. That stuff really, really works. There's no doubt in my mind it works. And also I'm using, you know, a lot more of my supplements than I normally do. And I'm much more muscular than I was when I was 50, but I'm just about as lean right now. All the love handles are almost completely gone.
You looked a lot. I saw you without a shirt on. You looked considerably, considerably leaner.
Yeah.
Definitely lost about 30, 35 pounds of body fat.
Oh, yeah. I'm down right now. I'm 209 or 210.
Wow.
209. Yeah. And I'm going to try to get down as close to 200 as possible, because I think that that's where I'll be really, really lean.
What did I tell you?
You said I would. You saw me as being a muscular 200 pounds.
Yeah. Great shot.
So that I'm very close to it right now.
Yeah, we never got to go to the gym or train or anything. I didn't go with anybody, so it's only I can say that you were remiss there, because I didn't go train at all.
Right.
I actually took 3 days off when I got home, because I was still kind of like feeling bad. Now, I was sick kind of coming into the Olympia, so.
Yeah, you were fighting like a flu-like almost cold or something.
For almost a week before, and then I was still a little sick while I was there. What do you think? How do you get to see me in real life? How did I look?
I couldn't get over. I mean, the last time I saw you to this time was amazing. Your chest is so much thicker. Your arms are so much bigger. I mean, or just all the way around. I mean, you've put on a lot of quality muscle. Very, very impressed. I told you I was jealous. Remember, I said I'm jealous.
Yeah,
I want to look like that.
I remember. when I was in my towel changing, you were looking at me very lasciviously.
Yes, yes, I was rolling my hands and drooling like Aqualung in the Jethro Tull album, you know.
Yes, yes,
snot
that.
Dripping down his nose. Da, na, na.
Yeah, because you said you saw my pictures from the contest.
They don't do you any justice. They don't do you any justice at all. You're really a lot bigger than you look in those pictures. So, yeah.
Fans always say that when they come up, like listeners of the show will come up and be like, wow, you're much bigger than I thought you were. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Remember, that's what Blackman told me the first time I met Steve Blackman.
Did he say that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the first thing he told
me. What,
matter of fact, that's practically all he told me.
What's that?
Remember, we had talked to him on the phone, me and you.
Right, right. And then he saw you. Where did he see you?
At the Arnold Classic backstage.
Was your zipper open when he said that?
Nah. No, I don't want to burn any bridges, Carl. We're not John and
I'm
Dave.
Not burning any bridges. It's just a joke. Come on, I just made a joke about me being a homo looking at you while you were in your towel. What? What's the big deal?
You're right. You're right.
I mean, come on.
You know they listen to the show over there at MD.
I know. I didn't say anything bad.
I love Steve Blackman. I think he's. I think of him as like a father figure.
Yeah, there you go. Adopt me. Adopt me. Stop me, Steve.
Yeah, so he came up, and that was the, he said, well, I came up to him, actually, and said hello, and, you know, introduced myself, and he kind of looked at it, and he said, oh, you're bigger than I thought you'd be. I said, oh, thank you, and then he kind of walked off.
Well, that's what Lonnie Teeper said to you, too, didn't he? Lonnie Teeper was like,
oh,
you're
Teeper
big.
Does that every time.
Oh, does he? You're big, he goes.
You're big, yeah. He said I was bigger than Hidetada Yamagishi.
Yeah, right. You are taller than him.
Yeah, he's always joking about that. I think that's mostly Jewish, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He doesn't. He said when we did the play-by-play on the video with me and Dave, he said 2.5 Jews. They're half a Jew.
I'm half a Jew.
No, he's half a Jew.
Oh.
And Dave is half a Jew, and I'm the other 1.5 Jews.
What the hell was I just going to say? Now I forgot. What holiday just passed? Didn't we just have a Jewish holiday?
Yom Kippur.
Right now. I mean, we're in it right now, right? Was it
that's
this?
Done. It's over now.
It's over now.
I mean, maybe it was another holiday, but it must be a smaller one. Cause, I mean, Sukkot, right?
Right, Sukkot. Right.
Yeah, you have your sukkahs outside. You're familiar with that, Carl?
Yeah, you got to build something outside, don't you?
Yeah, you got to build like a shelter. And,
right, a lean-to.
If you're really religious, you'll eat there and, you know, entertain people.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody out. Hey, everybody out on the front lawn.
It's actually like a really big mitzvah too, which
to,
mitzvah
to do it, eat, yeah.
To have invite somebody into your sukkahs and have provide them food.
You got to be careful the way you say that. It sounded like you said to invite somebody into your tukkahs.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, but that's like a big deal. So you'll invite people. So like people will go out, like in Israel, you know, and probably in New York too. They'll be looking for guests, you know, because they want to invite somebody in to feed them.
Right.
You know, so it's like a big deal. Anyway, interestingly enough. You want to go to break now?
Yeah, let's go.
A bunch of other topics.
Yeah, let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll pick up the show. You're listening to a special Tuesday edition of Off Topic Radio. Many people don't know we're on Tuesday, thanks to Jeff, the producer.
No, it's my fault. It's my fault.
Oh, okay, not Jeff's fault. I'm sorry.
I don't give him enough notice.
I know. And plus, he doesn't travel well. So with that, we'll go into the break. We'll be right back. You're stuck in a rut, looking to compete, want to make your mark in the fitness industry, or just want to look your best, Aaron Singerman can help. Sign up for 12-week, 24-week, or full-year training packages. All packages include training, diet, supplementation, and hormone optimization plans, periodic and regular phone consults, email communication, and text messaging included in all plans. Contact Aaron Singerman today at Aaron Singerman Fitness at hotmail.com.
LG Science's pre-workout performance enhancer Anadrolic State GT has grown exponentially in popularity in recent months. In July, Anadrolic State GT was named 2010 number one pre-workout product by bestrecovery.com, as well as nominated as best pre-workout product by bodybuilding.com. We here at LG Science's want to give back to you, which is why, for a limited time, we will be giving customers a free 330-gram bottle of BC plus EAA hydrolyzed peptides with each purchase of Anadrolic State GT from bodybuilding.com. That's right. Order Anadrolic State GT at bodybuilding.com now and get your free BC plus EAA. Offer only available while supplies last.
Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit speciesnutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. Speciesnutrition.com.
Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. If you're stuck in a rut, looking to compete, want to make your mark in the fitness industry, or just want to look your best, Aaron Singerman can help. Sign up for 12-week, 24-week, or full-year training packages. All packages include training, diet, supplementation, and hormone optimization plans. Periodic and regular phone consults, email communication, and text messaging included in all plans. Contact Aaron Singerman today at AaronSingermanFitness@hotmail.com.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
We have to thank GX, a newlywed himself, our music director, for the music today.
Thank you, GX.
He and his lovely bride, Dawn, will be joined together in blissful life in Canada. Cold, cold. Did I mention cold? Cold Canada. I bet there's a lot of teenage pregnancies in Canada. Usually when it's very cold, kids, do nothing but shag all day long.
They just want to hug together and gather the heat.
Hug, right? and bump uglies. Exactly. Exactly. So
that's
anyway,
isn't the pregnancy, teen pregnancy rate basically high anywhere there's like nothing to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Like small towns.
Yeah, small towns. Like, yeah, if it's boring.
Amy was from in like northern New York. My ex girlfriend. There's like everybody in her high school is pregnant.
Yeah, exactly. And same thing in like rural areas of New York, rural areas of New Jersey, rural areas of New Hampshire, all those places, you have lots of premature, teenage pregnancies because they have nothing else to do. You know, it's like you can only play Grand Theft Auto so many times, and then you want to have sex. And that's it. All right, so let's talk about what's going on at RX Muscle. There's a big shakeup there. John Romano left and went to work for what company?
BPX, Jack Owak.
And good for him. Good for John. I'm happy for him.
He's got he's got a kid. He's got Max living with him, his 9-year-old son. So
and he's got a beautiful girlfriend. So he probably wants to do some nice things for her.
Did you get to meet his girlfriend?
No, I have a feeling that John and I had the same MO. I heard that he was missing in action at the show as well.
Not nearly as much as you, but
yeah. Well, I guess I was having just
missing at the after party.
I was having just a tad more fun than him. Then. I heard several people say, where was John? And I was thinking, well, he's probably with his girlfriend.
Yeah, his girlfriend, Valerie, they were doing the one of the wrap-ups, and she came up to me and started talking to me. And at first I forgot that she was John's girlfriend because she surprised me. Because she is a very, very pretty girl, man. Very young, very pretty girl. John's doing pretty good for himself. I met her one time before in real life, and I know she listens to the show. And good for John. So I understood why he missed the after party. John left to work for VPUG, and I don't know what that means exactly. I'm assuming it's not like he went to shows anyway, other than Arnold and Olympia. He wasn't doing the TV show anymore because he moved to Florida, you know?
Right.
And I'm assuming he'll continue to do the radio show, as far as I know. So I don't know, and I'm sure he'll probably still write articles now and again. So I don't know, I don't really know how much it really affects anything, but technically John's job is not at RX Muscle anymore. It's at BPX. So there goes boss number two.
Right.
Right? Now the vice president of RX Muscle, Sean Andros, also the creator of RX Girl, has also left the scene. And he wrote a message on the board saying, you know, his last message or something like that, this farewell message. It basically said it was time for him to leave and he wants to explore other opportunities. And that was it, pretty much, you know.
But he's not, but he, that is it, I heard a rumor that he didn't tell Dave that was the deal, that he kind of misled Dave into what his plans were upon leaving.
No, I think I don't want to go into their business too much, but I think that he did give Dave notice and stuff like that. I think that just everybody was surprised to see Sean working for Flex at the Olympia.
Right.
You know, considering he was, you know, still living with Dave and everything. So I don't think that, I don't think it was anything that he did that was necessarily, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of that whole deal, but I think that it was just a surprise. And it turns out from what I understand that that's not a permanent position. It was just like doing some work for Flex. I really don't know the whole situation, but what I do know is that he's no longer working with Dave, and he's no longer working with RX Muscle.
And interestingly enough, my friend David Barr, who was at Flex, I believe he was at Flex, left there. I wonder if he got Sean Andros' job. I mean, if Sean Andros got that Dave Barr's job.
What was Dave Barr's job?
He was something to do with photo. He was at all the photo shoots. He coordinated all the photo shoots. And you remember he was there? Dave, don't you remember he was there when we were at Sandhill training? Remember that was my friend Dave Barr we were talking to.
At the Flamingo Gold?
Yeah. He was the guy that was overseeing all the photo shoots.
That would be something Sean could do because he put together all of the photo shoots.
Well, there you go.
Did all the videography for all the RX Muscle videos. So. That's certainly possible, you know. I'm happy for Sean. I think that's, you know, I'm like one of the type of people, there's, in our industry, we have a lot of people that are like jealous, you know, and I find that a lot of times I hear people saying stuff and I see their behavior and it makes me think like a lot of people, maybe in any industry, but there's a lot of jealousy and like, you know, as Derek Anthony said, there's a lot of haters.
Yeah.
But for me, when I see somebody do good or you know, upward movement, regardless of where, whether it be, you know, from one thing to another, I'm happy for people. If Sean feels like he'd be happier, and you know, obviously, I would think working for Flex doing that would be, you know,
a big step up
promotion,
from,
a big
yeah,
step up from
yeah.
working as Dave's.
Yeah, assistant. Because let's face it, Flex is a well known publication, and
working for Flex is about as good as you get. You know,
yeah, he's gonna have a lot more contact with the higher echelons of the industry
for what he does. And so that's a good thing. So I'm happy for him.
Yeah, me too.
And I
just want to throw something in here just for a second, real quick, because I use Flex Magazine as an example. Flex Magazine has a monthly circulation of 109,000 magazines, and Superhuman Radio had a monthly download of 186,737 downloads in September. Just saying. That's all. Just saying. Okay. That's
too bad Superhuman Radio doesn't make the same kind of money as Flex.
And that is my point exactly. That's
the revenue.
It. That's yeah. it. You know, those people out there who are looking to find a good advertising venue, we got it. So, anyway.
Yeah. We're off topic now, Carl. Get off topic advertisers.
Off topic has a slightly smaller audience, but nonetheless.
Flex Magazine?
No, than Superhuman Radio, but nonetheless, very, very impressive. Probably,
very.
We probably have, you know, we don't see
don't
all the.
Don't give out any numbers.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say we don't see the downloads that occur on.
We don't see the downloads that occur on
RX Muscle, but we see what comes down from my server from iTunes, and it's very impressive. Very, very impressive.
Yeah.
Just leave it at that.
So anyway, RX Muscle seems to be emptying out. I mean, there's nobody that, as far as I know, nobody has replaced John Romano as boss number two, and nobody's replaced Sean Andros as the vice president of RX Muscle. So it leaves it in an interesting position. I've actually been calling Sally Ann Taylor, Sally Ann from the board, to try to get her on the show to give us a state of the board address.
State of the union. Yeah, I like that.
Lewis did the state of the board address with a big sexy about a year ago. I thought we would have another, like an annual state of
I remember
better time than now.
Yeah, remember? I remember that. It was cool.
So remember we played the music?
Yeah, that was cool.
But I'm going to get in touch with Sally. She says she's been sick. So, it sounds like a lot of people have been sick since the
Olympics. And you know, it's really, and interestingly enough, I don't know if you are aware of this, but I am, I was signed by Dr. Scott Connolly to produce a new radio show for him called Body RX.
Yes, I've heard of this. You told me it's very exciting news.
And as soon as the news hit the boards, it hit musculardevelopment.com and it hit rxmuscle.com and a couple others because I announced it on my show.
Right.
And as soon as the news hit the boards, interestingly enough, Dr. Connolly got an email from Jeff the producer saying, hey, we can do a better job producing that show for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Carl.
I'm just saying, just saying. I'm just saying, that's all. Just saying. Anyway. But anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be a really exciting show.
Yeah.
Really exciting. And, Dr. Connolly is going to rip people new assholes. I would say to the supplement industry, be very afraid because we have no sponsors on the show, so we don't have to worry about pissing anybody off. And Dr. Connolly is not going to pull any punches. If you have a product that is built on bunk science, he's probably going to talk about you. So,
I'm interested to hear the show, that's for sure. And with you co-hosting the show, thank God you're going to be co-hosting the show because Dr. Connolly, for an hour by himself, could just be one big soliloquy, you know?
Right, and that's why he wanted me. We talked about it. He selected me. He told me that he wanted to do the show, and he absolutely wanted me to kind of anchor it for him. And I was flattered, to say the least. And he insisted. He said that the only way he would do the show is if I anchored it with him. And I said, I'll do it.
Well, I he totally needs you, so I can.
I'll keep him on point. He really, you know what? I'll keep him on point.
He's overbearing too. You know, it's not like you have to be. You need somebody like you because if you have somebody that lets him talk, you know, doesn't guide him, he could just go.
Yeah.
An hour could be over, and there's the end of the show, and he didn't even get anything accomplished.
But you know what? I predict that as the show goes on and he becomes more sensitive to what the cadence of the radio show is, he won't need me as much, and that'll be fine. But, yeah, you're right. In the beginning, my job is going to be to produce the show and also keep him on point. Absolutely.
Right, definitely. Yeah,
it's a lot. I'm very excited. And I already know some of the guests that he's shooting for, and we're talking about high-level guests in government. We're not talking about board people. You know, somebody said, hey, have Dave and Arthur L. Ray on the show to debate Dr. Connolly. Dr. Connolly wants to debate the Surgeon General. You know, it's like he doesn't want to debate the guys on the board. So it's going to be really fucking exciting. And he has the connections to get to those people too. That's the best part.
Right.
So it's going to be fun.
Is all the shows going to be him debating people? Or
no, no. He's going to be exposing bunk science. He's already doing label claim work on stuff. I mean, he's going to blow
he's putting money behind the show too.
Yes, he's the money behind the show, so we don't have to worry about like him pissing somebody off and losing a sponsor, and that's the beauty of it. He's already done label claim work on some products. He's going to fucking blow some people out of the water.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
I'm serious when I say this. If you're a supplement company or even a food manufacturer, he's going after some of the mainstream food manufacturers. If you're a supplement company or a food manufacturer and you are basing your products on fucking bunk science, you probably will hear your name on his show.
Okay, well, Carl, something new I've been doing, Carl. This is a big, little off topic from Dr. Connolly, but
okay.
I've been training my little sister who just moved in town and her boyfriend. My sister is a registered nurse. She was living and working in Austin where she went to school at UT. She moved here to move in with her boyfriend, David, and I've been training them. It's it's been an interesting experience. So,
They never realize how strong you are, probably, right?
Oh, well, I've been working out with them. I guess that's an important distinction between just training them. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not so sure that it really translates to somebody who doesn't work out at all. You know, like, I mean, they see that let's see, David's doing a 5-pound dumbbell, I'm doing a 100-pound dumbbell. I mean, they know the difference, but I'm not sure that it translates other than to look and be like, wow, that looks
well. Didn't they have to hand you a set of dumbbells while you were working a chest or something like that?
Well, when I do shoulders, yeah, that's right. When I do shoulders, once I get past 110-pound dumbbells, I can't pick them up on my own.
Right.
The dumbbell from being seated, dumbbell shoulder press.
Yeah, and then throw them up into place. So you can actually compromise your shoulders, right?
Right. It becomes, once you get above 110s, the press is easier than getting them into a place to press them.
Right, right.
I think that's not just me. I think a lot of people, I mean, when I work out with PJ, I hand him the dumbbell, he hands me the dumbbell the same way.
Right.
Just to press.
Right.
And so they had to, I had David hand me one of the 110-pound dumbbells, and it was, you know, I'm sure that, I guess that puts it into focus. But it was scary for me because I was worried that he was going to hurt himself, you know, handing me the dumbbell. And I mean, to pick up the dumbbell off the floor and to get it into the right position to hand it to somebody, you can't have your hand on the bar in the middle, you know what I mean?
Right.
So you have to hold both sides of the dumbbell. So, yeah, but it's been interesting just because to train two people that, you know,
don't normally
really
train. What did your sister's boyfriend say to you or say to her in contemplation of working out and putting on muscle?
He really said to her, not to me, but he said to her that he is concerned about getting too muscular. He doesn't want to be like, you know, a bodybuilder.
I that's cute. That's so cute. If I was there, I would say, come here, come sit on my leg over here for a second. Come here. I want to tell you a story about how to build muscle. First of all, you will never, ever, ever, ever get that fucking big unless you start using juice.
Right.
I love
usually
that.
Usually hear that from girls. Like I've
Which actually, which kind of puts your little sister's boyfriend in perspective.
Oh.
I'm just fucking around. Come on.
He just doesn't want to be as big as me. You know what I mean?
Who does he want to be as big as? Have you ever asked him what his physical ideal would be? Like,
it's actually interesting. Interestingly enough, his goals are very attainable. He doesn't. You know, he wants to look like a swimmer or a basketball player.
Mm.
Which is interesting. When he told me that, I was very surprised.
So he wants to be tall, black, and hairless. Right? That's his goal, huh? We could do that if he shoots enough Melanotan 2. Shaves his body, and we put him on a rack and stretch him, he could get there.
Actually, that would be, I'll have to ask him next time he says he wants to look like a basketball player.
So next time he says he wants to look like a swimmer or a basketball player, ask him if he wants to be tall, black, and hairless. Because, you know, the swimmers are hairless, and you get the rest of the picture. Anyway.
Yeah, I got it.
That's funny. Do we even want to do the current events, or we want to just go right in and get Father Mike on the show?
Hey, hold on. What do we got? We got 12 minutes. Why don't you pick one of the articles? We'll talk about it.
I think the most interesting of all these articles is why do heavy drinkers?
Next time we need the news music.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Why do heavy drinkers outlive non-drinkers? This was in Time Magazine.
Yeah, this is one I picked out for you because it struck me as very it certainly was, like you said, I would have lost the bet on this one.
Maybe the problem with heavy drinkers, the reason heavy drinkers live longer than non-drinkers is because they're so fucking drunk they forget to stop breathing. Nah, that can't be it. Okay.
No, they're saying that the heavy drinkers live longer.
Yeah, I said they're so drunk they forget to stop breathing. They live longer. You know, they don't. No,
I got it.
Maybe they're pickled. I don't know. Why would abstaining from alcohol lead to shorter life? Maybe because if you're no fun, you should die sooner.
Maybe if you drink more, you're less stressed out or something.
That could be it.
You know, you have got less stress because you're.
You know, interestingly enough, diabetic.
If you're a heavy drinker, you think you'd have a lot of problems, you know, like problems in your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Unrelated to even your
Yeah, health. Like in other words, you're a miserable bastard, and why would your life be any easier than anybody else's? It should
right.
be more stressful.
You wouldn't be able to pay the bills. You wouldn't be able to hold down a job.
But when you're drunk, you don't care. When you don't care. There was 1,824 participants who followed over 20 years. One drawback of the sample is a disproportionate number, 63% of them were men, and just over 69 of them abstained. The abstainers died. 69% of the abstainers died. During the 20 years, 60% of the heavy drinkers died, and only 41% of the moderate drinkers died. So it looks like the moderate drink, no, yeah, the heavy drinkers, no, the moderate drinkers really are the best off, it looks like.
41%.
Yeah, 41%. These are remarkable statistics. Even though heavy drinking is associated with higher risks of cirrhosis and several other types of cancer, heavy drinkers are less likely to die than people who don't drink, even if they never had a problem with alcohol. But, well, you know what? We know that a little bit of alcohol goes a long way. It's a fact. My grandfather drank wine every single day. He lived to 98 years old, and he wouldn't have died had they have performed surgery on him, but they said he was too old for surgery, and which was bullshit. And then today's standards, they would have performed surgery on him.
They'll keep you alive as long as you keep paying for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, back in the day, you know, I was a little kid when my grandfather died, and the problem was he was taking aspirin too frequently and gave himself a bleeding ulcer. And when he went to the hospital, they thought he was younger than he was. And when they found that he was 98, they were like, "Oh no, we can't operate on him."
That's interesting. I wonder, what do you think about that? About people. About them keeping people alive so long these days.
I don't know. It's mixed. I mean, I think if the person has a shot of coming out of it and like becoming normal again, then there's some value to it. But I think keeping people alive just for the sake of preserving life is misguided. It's part of our, you know, we say church and state are separate, but they're really not. And these notions of preserving life have more to do with religious theocracy than they do with politics.
You know, I've been watching this show on TV. You've probably heard of it before, Breaking Bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
About the guy, the science teacher, former chemistry, just like wizard, and he starts making crystal meth because he finds out he has cancer to support his family.
Right.
Like when he dies, he wants to leave them some money. You know. So anyway, in the thing that the wife is in the show, the wife is pressuring the guy with he has stage 3A lung cancer, and basically the diagnosis he gets is extremely bleak. Like maybe with all these therapies and chemo and radiation, you can live an extra year or two.
Right.
Or he can live out his life, you know, comparatively, relatively pain-free, you know, for quite a while, for the next, you know, 6 months or somewhat of time, and live at a higher quality of life for a while until, you know, eventually dies. So it's interesting, the wife is pressuring him. It basically ends up pressuring him in therapy and all this, the radiation and chemo, to maybe live, you know, an extra year. And the doctor goes through the list of things he can expect, you know, bleeding, painful gums, you know, erectile dysfunction,
yeah,
hair loss.
Destruction of his heart, destruction of his kidneys.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like a long, long list. And when he gets home, they have like a family meeting, and he says, "You know what? I just don't want to do it." He says, "You know, I want to be able to, before I die, enjoy a good meal. You know, be able to
have a nice heart on."
He says to make love to my wife. And you know, when he makes that argument, at first I was like, "Dude, he's crazy to pass up the treatment. You know, the chance at another year or two of life." So when he makes that argument, I'm kind of like,
But also,
right.
You have to remember that these doctors don't always get it right either. And a lot of times the chemotherapy kills the person a lot of times. I know a guy who went, He had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and he went in for chemotherapy. The non-Hodgkin's lymphoma probably would have taken a decade, maybe longer to kill him.
Right.
But the chemotherapy destroyed his heart. He was dead 4 years after the chemotherapy. And they said, you know, he got out of chemotherapy and he started to develop these symptoms, you know, swollen ankles. And they said, "Oh, well, you've got congestive heart failure now." And he was a very robust, very athletic guy his whole life. He's like, "I never had congestive heart." "Well, that is a side effect of the chemotherapy." He's like, "What?" So, you know, chemotherapy is like, the chemotherapy is the equivalent of, you've got a spot on the rug in your living room. So you burn the fucking house down to get rid of the spot on the rug. That's what chemotherapy is.
But sometimes it does work, though.
Right? It always works. It always works. It always works. But it also always kills the person, too. It always shortens their life. I mean, not always.
You hope that you don't do enough damage. You don't burn the house so badly that you can't rebuild.
Right. I mean, but it always works. When my brother-in-law used ginger extract to cure his lymphoma, and I went into the oncologist up in Tucson and sat down with them and said, how many times have you seen this? And he goes, well, it always goes away with chemotherapy. No, I says, no, how many times have you seen it without chemotherapy? He says, never. So chemotherapy always kills the cancer because it kills everything. It kills every fucking thing in your body.
Yeah, it makes you pretty sick, huh?
Oh, it's disgusting. I would never go for chemotherapy. I'd find some other alternatives. I don't mean some quackery alternatives either. I mean, right. I would find other alternatives. And sometimes vigilance. A lot of times if you change your lifestyle, you start eating right, you start getting good sleep, you get your hormones straightened out, you go to an anti-inflammatory approach of life where everything you're eating is anti-inflammatory in nature, lots of omega-3s, and you just are vigilant and you exercise because exercise is critical, oxygenation, so on and so forth, you find that, oh my God, it's going away on its own. There's a lot of people who have cancer right now that won't kill them because it'll go away before it kills them.
Well, I don't know what happens to Mr. White in Breaking Bad, but I'll let you know if the chemo and the radiation help him. I have a feeling since they're on season 4, he must make it for a little while.
Yeah, otherwise it's a short show.
Yeah, but the show is great, by the way. You should rent that. In season 1, that's where I started.
Oh, check it out. I'm into Glee right now. Have you ever watched Glee? I know that's gay, but I'm into
pretty
Glee.
Gay. Yeah, I didn't even know what it was. It's so popular on iTunes. It's always the most popular show, and that's where I download all my shows. So I always look at that, and I'm like, fuck, that show is so popular. And I asked my sister the other day, you know, now that she's here, I talk to you more often, I said, what is the show Glee? And she told me it's about a Glee club.
But it's really cool. It's a lot of singing. There's a lot of theatrics and a lot of singing in it. I don't know if you remember back in the day.
Sounds gay, Carl.
No, it is. And the truth is, Ms. X watches it, so I watch
it
too.
That's surprising that you like it.
There you go. But anyway, yeah, because I'm gay. But anyway, see, I can take it. But anyway, do you remember like 15 years ago, maybe longer, maybe 20, 22 years ago, there was a show on TV with Mandy Patinkin and a bunch of other people, and it was like a doctor show where every now and then they would just break into song, like in the middle of a scene, like a really heavy scene where the patient is dying, and they would break into fucking operatic song. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Sounds very familiar. It was Scrubs.
It wasn't Scrubs, but it was on one season and one season only because people were so painfully put off by the introduction of song during like really, really heavy parts of the show. But now I'm listening to.
Do you watch the show and you would watch it without Mrs. X or
no Glee? Yeah, Glee is good. Glee is really good because it's got a good storyline. Number one. The characters are interesting. There's a couple funny characters. And the kids are really talented. I mean, the music they do is retro. They do a lot of music from my childhood, and I enjoy it. Yeah, I really would.
You'll have to watch Breaking Bad and tell me what's better.
Yeah. A buff guy who's posted a joke, Carl, tall, black, and hairless. Haha. You need to do After Hours, he says, because of my joke about your future son-in-law, your future brother-in-law.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Should we take a break and then we'll come back and we'll have Father Mike on for a while?
I think that's all we had to talk about, huh? Yeah.
We
got to say next week, Nationals is coming up.
Yeah, and we got to all wish PJ Braun. PJ is in amazing shape.
You think we should have PJ on next week before Nationals?
Yeah.
We'll have him come back on because next week is the last show before Nationals, which I will be at in Atlanta for Nationals. So it's going to be a really competitive Nationals. And I got to say, PJ Braun made the very smart move of becoming a heavyweight for this show.
Yeah.
We thought he was going to be a super heavyweight, and he's sucking down into the heavyweight class because it's a much less competitive
And he's
class.
Doing it, too. He's doing it. I mean, he was on my – by the way, we did a great show on Superhuman Radio today. PJ Braun gives advice on how to train your legs, and we talk about his approach to this competition. He's like down to 230-something right now.
233.6 this morning.
And he's losing like a pound a day right now, and he hasn't even cut his carbs out. He says that he should be able to...
He's eating the same food, Carl, as when he started.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
He only changed his red meat to fish. That's it.
Unbelievable.
So his body has really responded to
And then he will blow up over a couple days, right? I mean, he'll
The idea is that he was going to suck down to 225 and a quarter and then fill back out to around what he's at. Because he could compete. At the pictures I've seen, he could compete right now. So he could technically fill out back out to around 233, 234, and he'll be an enormous heavyweight.
He's gonna pull a Kevin English.
Yeah, he's gonna pull a mini Kevin English.
Yeah.
So he's gonna. That's the plan. Now, how he's doing that, I'm not going to reveal, but there is a plan and a system laid out.
He talked about it on my show. He has a vacuum cleaner that he sticks in his ass every night, and he sucks the excess air out of his body every evening. And that air is then filled in with water, and then he pisses the water out. It's a very, very effective system. We call it the pneumatic the PJ Braun pneumatic evacuation system. You need a very strong, like a Dyson vacuum cleaner.
PJ tells me he really enjoys the ass sucking.
Yes, he says he's actually able to use the hose now without any lube. He said he's gotten so used to it.
But it's 3 inches in diameter.
Yes,
not that big.
He only used to use the tip, the 5-inch tip, but now he pushes it all the way up to the hose. He gets about a foot and a half in his ass now.
He wanted to get right into the colon area.
He's getting as far up as possible.
He's getting into large intestine.
The PJ Braun pneumatic weight loss system. We got a brand
also,
that.
Also known as the ass sucker.
Yeah, the ass sucker. There you go. All right, let's take a quick commercial break. We're going to segue from this filth, and we're going to have Father Mike Pulcinella on in a couple minutes. Sorry, Father. Bless me, Father. Bless me. We'll be right back.
LG Science's pre-workout performance enhancer Anadrolic State GT has grown exponentially in popularity in recent months. In July, Anadrolic State GT was named 2010 number one pre-workout product by BestRecovery.com, as well as nominated as best pre-workout product by Bodybuilding.com. We here at LG Science's want to give back to you, which is why, for a limited time, we will be giving customers a free 330-gram bottle of BC plus EAA hydrolyzed peptides with each purchase of Anadrolic State GT from bodybuilding.com. That's right. Order Anadrolic State GT at bodybuilding.com now and get your free BC plus EAA. Offer only available while supplies last.
Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit speciesnutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. Speciesnutrition.com.
Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. If you're stuck in a rut, looking to compete, want to make your mark in the fitness industry, or just want to look your best, Aaron Singerman can help. Sign up for 12-week, 24-week, or full-year training packages. All packages include training, diet, supplementation, and hormonal optimization plans. Periodic and regular phone consults, email communication, and text messaging included in all plans. Contact Aaron Singerman today at AaronSingermanFitness@hotmail.com.
LG Science's pre-workout performance enhancer Anadrolic State GT has grown exponentially in popularity in recent months. In July, Anadrolic State GT was named 2010 number one pre-workout product by BestRecovery.com, as well as nominated as best pre-workout product by Bodybuilding.com. We here at LG Science's want to give back to you, which is why, for a limited time, we will be giving customers a free 330-gram bottle of BC plus EAA hydrolyzed peptides with each purchase of Anadrolic State GT from bodybuilding.com. That's right. Order Anadrolic State GT at bodybuilding.com now and get your free BC plus EAA. Offer only available while supplies last.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back to Super... Oh, no, what am I talking about? Off-topic radio. What the fuck? Sorry about that. Sorry, I was dozing. I was just thinking about a story that I never told you, and I got to tell it on the air. First of all, Mike Pulcinella is on the phone. How you doing, Mike?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
I got to tell this. I got to tell this story first.
That's such a shitty introduction for Mike. You're supposed to say, you know,
Father Mike.
No. I was going to say the creator of the Raising Bar trilogy, Kai Green Overkill, and most recently Kai Green Redemption. You're going to go, ah, I got Father Mike on the phone. All right.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I apologize. I really do.
Go ahead.
But I just thought of something.
Mike, he would never do that on Superhuman Radio.
Listen. Well, this is a little more casual. But listen, I got to tell you this story. I forgot all about this. The last time I went out of town before the Olympia, you know what I'm talking about, right, Aaron?
Yeah. Okay. I know that you went out of town.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was staying with a friend. And I fell asleep. This song just reminded me of it. I was sleeping in the spare room on the back of the house, and the next door neighbor is an alcoholic. And in the middle of the night at like 2 o'clock in the morning, I hear my Sharona fucking blasting through the wall of the room, right? And I wake up and I'm laying there and I'm, you know, and I'm fucking going, oh my God. And I'm laying there. Now it's like 10 minutes. Now I'm fucking fuming, right? Then the song changes. Then he's blasting this other fucking song. So I go out on the, I sleep naked. I go out on the balcony naked. And my buddy has all these newspapers on his back patio. And I'm flinging these fucking newspapers into this guy's back patio. And so finally he comes out, right? And I'm standing there fucking naked with the railing obviously isn't blocking anything. Like fuming. My eyes were fucking coming out of my head. And I go to him, shut that fucking radio. He goes to me, pardon me? I go, shut that fucking radio before I pardon your fucking head through the wall. Naked, I'm standing there yelling at him, right? It was just a funny story. You had to be there. Okay.
Did he turn off the music?
Shit, yeah. You see some crazy fucking guy with his eyes bulging out of his head, fucking naked. Like, the guy is so, like, crazed that he doesn't even realize he's fucking naked standing in front of you? He shut the radio and he apologized to me the next morning when we were leaving to go to breakfast. He was like, oh, I'm so sorry.
The radio is he was drunk.
What's that?
He was drunk.
Yeah, he was drunk blasting the radio.
Okay.
Anyway, it was just a funny story. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that, Father Mike. I like calling you Father Mike. I'm sorry about that.
Just for the record, Mike is not a priest. Just for the record.
Oh, I know that. I know that.
I know. I know you know that, but make sure everybody realizes because we're going to call him Father Mike.
I was the first one to call him that, I think, too, during one of the off-topic shows.
I'm the one that always argues against religion. How did I end up being called Father Mike? That's what I can't.
You know what it is, Mike? You look like when I was a kid, there were a lot of priests. That you could have resembled some of them. You know what I mean? Like real, you know, straight edge guys, you know, clean cut, well, you know, well meaning guys. And unfortunately, they all turned out to be pedophiles. I'm not suggesting that you are, but.
Well, thank you very much. Just for the record, before anyone gets all up in arms, I'm not an atheist. I don't know if there's a God or not, but I don't like religion, which is man-made.
I'm with you on that. I feel exactly. And that's probably because you were a product of the parochial school system, I want to bet.
Absolutely. 8 years.
Me too. And see, that if anything will make you hate fucking religion, it's being a Catholic kid in a parochial school.
Absolutely.
So. You have, like, nuns and stuff?
Yeah, nuns and priests and fathers. Brothers, I mean. Nuns and brothers.
Some incredibly brutal nuns. And some incredibly sweet ones, too, but some incredibly brutal nuns.
Well, just think about it, Mike. If you had to walk around in that habit in the middle of fucking August in New York or Boston or Philadelphia, you'd be miserable, too, wouldn't you?
And be celibate your entire life.
Well, let's face it. None of them were celibate. That's a rumor. That's a lie. None of them were celibate. They were fucking the priests all the time.
Any of them? You don't think
that's true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely confirmed.
My father told me stories about when they tore down the old church that they rebuilt it. They found the skeletons of babies in the walls. And where'd those fucking babies come from?
I think these are urban legends. I don't know. I don't know about this.
Well, just let's look at human nature. Do you really? I mean, we already know that the priests aren't celibate because they're fucking little boys. So, do you really think the nuns were celibate?
You're right. My stance is always. Look at human nature, use common sense, and you're right, looking at it that way.
I mean, imagine if you were a priest.
There are
I
some
was,
nuns, though, Carl, that you have seen that look like I believe it. Come on.
That they what? They are
celibate?
Celibate.
Yeah, I've seen some nuns. Well, plenty of salt
there. Yeah, you may be right. I mean, there's some people walking around on the streets that haven't had sex in a decade. So I could believe that there's some celibate nuns, but I got to believe that overall they were doing something to relieve themselves.
You think the priest and the nuns get it on?
You know, maybe once a year at Christmas time. You know, under the mistletoe. You never know. I mean, you know,
the Christmas parties at the churches can be cool.
There were. I had a couple. I got to tell you the truth. I had a couple hot nuns. I had a couple of young nuns. One was in particular was Sister Frances McGlynn, I think her name was. A cute little Irish girl with blonde hair. She was petite. She had a nice bust. She was kind of sexy. She was kind of sexy.
Sister Michael Raymond.
See?
Took us all on a swimming trip one time.
Right.
She was a young woman who had been jilted at the altar and went into the nunnery. She took us on a swimming trip and came out in a one-piece black bathing suit, and she was hot.
See? See?
Yeah.
Now, Mike, be honest now, Mike, because this is radio, okay? Did you ever rub one out to her? That's a yes. That's a yes. That pause was a yes.
That was way too long.
That pause was a yes. Mike, it's okay. God forgives you. Don't worry about it.
God won't smite you, Mike.
God probably rubbed one out to her.
Well, she was married to God.
That's so. Right. See? And he had the right to. So there you go.
I would tell you if I did.
I had the hots for one of the lay teachers, as they used to call them. Her name was Miss Testa. She was a cute little Italian girl, blonde hair. No, she actually had like dirty blonde, like brownish hair. But she had... tiny little waist. I remember her waist was so her waist to upper body and lower body ratio was so small. It was just amazing. I thought she was so sexy.
You're reminding me of a fifth grade teacher when I was in seventh grade who was sort of like chunky but well built.
Right.
And we used to call her Miss Meat because she was hot. And I remember we used to fight over who would get to go into her room to empty her little trash can, because I had that duty with another friend of mine. We would fight over who would get to empty Miss Meat's trash can.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
You ever find any used tampons rolled up in toilet paper?
Used condoms.
Any of that stuff?
Never
again?
Did.
No.
Never
no.
did.
Well, let's get to the DVDs, Carl.
No, fuck that. This is off topic, man.
It's off topic. Who cares?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I was going to. We're going to talk about Mike's personal life towards the end, Carl. So you'll have something to look forward to.
Okay.
Mike, let's go to the DVDs for a minute. Okay, is that all right?
Yeah,
that's fine. We'll get off your show.
Yeah, we'll get off the nuns for just a moment. I'm sure we'll find a way.
Let's get back on the nuns quickly.
Get on the nuns later.
Wait a minute. Okay, we can
You're
stop
done?
Now.
You're
yeah,
done.
I'm
You're
done.
Done. Give him Carl about 30 minutes. He'll be ready again. all right, so the last time we had you on, Mike, we were talking about Kai Greene's last DVD, or your last DVD, Kai Greene, Overkill. So tell us what's happened from then. That was the last one with Kai until now. Tell us a little bit about how you went from there to this new one and what's happened since then, what's transpired.
Well, that took us up to the Olympia, the last Olympia. Two Olympias ago.
And Kai Greene came in fourth place, and everybody was hoping,
right.
including Kai and Oscar, that
and,
he was going to win.
And everyone, including him, was saying it was some kind of a horrible failure. And I thought, fourth place, your first time out, that seems pretty good to me. So we should have had him explain himself, and Oscar did his best to explain it, and that was Overkill. But obviously the next hurdle for them was to go forward and to try to win the Arnold for a second time, and prove that whatever had happened at that first Olympia was just an anomaly. It was just a slight miscalculation. What, in fact, they were trying to do was they were chasing Dexter Jackson's kind of physique, because he was the previous winner. And so they were trying to get Kai smaller with a narrow waist and all that kind of thing, and they worked him too much. They overworked him, and he came in flat-looking and didn't do as well as he might have.
They also sequestered him in Las Vegas for 7 weeks.
That's right, right. They went to they did like a boxer's camp, they called it, where they went away to Las Vegas and they sequestered themselves away from the entire world, and it was just too extreme, hence the name Overkill. It was just too much of everything. They learned from that, and so from the Olympia to the Arnold Classic, they stayed at home, you know, he relaxed when he could, and they worked out and built his physique in the way that they knew best. He was bigger, and he went into the Arnold and won it. Now, there is some controversy, you know, as there always is among the top guys, you know, whether they really deserve to win or not. And I'm not here to say that because my eye is still at this point not sharp enough to really tell the distinctions sometimes at the upper levels like this. I'm still fairly new to all of this.
Right.
But the fact is he went into the Arnold the way he wanted to, comfortably, and he did very well. And that's what the second DVD, Redemption, was about. It was about following him from the Olympia all the way to the Arnold. And this time we got a lot more backstage access and just a lot more access in general.
Let's talk about his mindset for a minute. Watching, you know, when, you know, I've watched the Redemption video now that you sent me, and I watched the Overkill video before, and there's a distinct difference in the mindset of Kai Greene. I don't know, why do you think there's such a huge difference between, you know, what we see in Overkill and what we see in Redemption?
I think that he was a bit overwhelmed by the prospect of being on that Olympia stage for the first time. I think it really got to him. And he was a bit, I don't want to use the word frightened of it, but he was more nervous about that than he was going to the Arnold, which he had already won before. So what
right.
you see from Overkill to Redemption is just a level of comfort, a level of confidence. And in addition to that, I had more interviews with him where he really started to explain to me the principles, the power of the mind principles that he and Oscar use to, you know, to keep him strong and to keep him moving forward.
One of the things I noticed during when he is talking about his mindset, you know, for this is that I think that it must have helped him being in Brooklyn. You see him training in the gym in Brooklyn. It's gotta relax the guy. You know, going completely out of your element to Las Vegas or compared to being in Brooklyn where he lives. You know, that's gotta help him. You know, kind of ease his mind, not to worry about as much, right?
I would think so, but you know, let's say you were preparing for something big, a contest, whatever. Wouldn't sequestering yourself away from everyone really help you concentrate on doing that? In the first DVD, I even asked my brother about it. He said, I would do the same thing. Cut myself off from everything, which he did anyway in his real life. He would cut himself off from everyone when he was getting ready for a contest. But to me, I actually thought that that would work. I thought that the idea of going away and doing nothing but eating, sleeping, and living that show would work. Do you think it would work for you to do something like that? A total immersion.
I think you have to have a certain environment around you. I mean, it does work for some people. I mean, you look at guys like Mike Tyson. They used to go to the Catskills, and they would stay up there and they trained. But they were surrounded by people who supplied them with all the things that they needed, and the environment was different. I mean, I don't
right. remember. Oscar was saying that he couldn't find the right fish. They didn't have the right equipment. You know, he was saying that like what you were talking about, Carl. Mike Tyson had everything provided for
right,
him.
That's what I'm saying. I mean,
I think he wasn't missing anything.
I think if you really do, if you do that sort of a thing and you have everything set up.
Yeah, Mike Tyson probably had his own bed shipped up there.
Well, or maybe he had a bed, you know, don't forget, Customato lived up at that place. I mean, he was probably up there when he was a kid.
Right.
And so it was like a second home for him, but he was sequestered and he did nothing but eat, sleep, and drink. You know, boxing.
Right.
So I think it does work, but I think there's certain elements that have to be present in order to make it possible to work. Otherwise, it's you're being gulagged. It's like you're being punished. It's like this sucks. I want to get the fuck out of here.
Right.
But you know what else? Tyson might have been the kind of person, and I don't know this for a fact, who was easily distracted by things, and so to leave him at home in his own environment, he might not be as focused.
I have to disagree with that. I have to I mean, it's about Tyson. Tyson, when Tyson was on his fucking game and before he got caught up in all the bullshit, the guy was like a fucking pit bull. He was laser focused. I mean, the guy had the ability to focus so hard on something that he could burn a hole in it. Now, he had amazing willpower. And I don't think that he was easily distracted. I think that was Cus's style. I think Cus D'Amato used to bring him up to the Catskills because they could eat, sleep, and drink. He was 24 hours a day. He was sleeping boxing style. He was eating boxing. He was fucking, they were constantly talking to him about his footwork while he was eating. He was watching fucking videotapes. I mean, it was like an intensive.
Kai's like that too, isn't he? Like, at home, I mean.
Is he, Mike?
But I'm sorry, say that again. I don't
Kai, is Kai, is Kai, well. Is Kai like that? Kai is like that also?
Yeah, that's the point that I was going to make, is that you don't need to take Kai away from home, because when he's at home, he's like that. He's totally focused. Every minute of every day is directed towards his goal. At least that's what he says.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you from watching the training, the difference in, you don't. That's one of the good things about your videos, Mike, is you don't focus. You know, you don't see whole training sessions, without stopping. Like the old Mitsu videos, he would have, an hour of the video would be just watching Ronnie work out, So you only have bits and pieces, but from what I could see, it looked like Kai in the newer video in Redemption, his training, he looked like he wasn't dying. You know what I mean? Like in Overkill, he looked like he was taking everything that he had just to be there, to continue the workout at all points.
Absolutely. Between the Olympia and the Arnold, he was healthy, he was strong. There was none of that dragging himself through the workout kind of thing. Not at all. Not at all.
Remember, Kai had blew out his eyes from the Olympia. Remember, he had those red eyes from the squatting or whatever?
Yeah, right. Right. He blew his eyes out and everything at the Olympia. I mean,
it just looked much healthier.
Yeah, much healthier. Much healthier.
Yeah, much healthier.
I mean, even though he was pushing himself, as you see in the leg workout, the squatting workout, I mean, he was pushing himself to the limit where, to recover from each set, he had to, lay flat out on the ground. But that's just his style. That's what he does.
He's very dramatic.
He can fall asleep. He can fall asleep between sets, and Oscar wakes him up, and he goes right back to it. I've seen him take naps between sets.
That's crazy. You said you had more access. That's one of the things you complained about when we were on the show. One of your biggest gripes last time when we had you on about Overkill was that you had limited access, not just to Kai and Oscar, but also backstage access, access to contests or events. This time, it looks like you got more access.
I think what happened, looking back upon it now, at the time in Overkill, I sort of made the argument that Kai and Oscar were uncomfortable with me being there. And to a slight extent, that may have been true. But not as much. It was more that they were unprepared for me. In fact, I was being sent out by the supplement company, in their mind, just to film a couple of workouts in Las Vegas,
right.
Not to embed myself with them and want to be in the hotel room with them all the time. They just weren't ready for that. You have to prepare yourself for that kind of personal invasion, and I understand that. So it was only after they saw the work that I did with Overkill, and in fact, they watched it and they called me together. Kai and Oscar called me, and they said, "We apologize. We had no idea what you were trying to do, and it was amazing what you did with the scraps that we threw you. From now on, you're going to have more access. We're going to be more involved in this process." So that's all it was. It was really about me proving myself, in a sense. They just didn't know what I was trying to do. They thought it was the same old, workout videos. And here I'm trying to get that next level that I've done in raising the bar and those kinds of things.
Right, where you have access to your brother, unlimited access, where he'll actually sit down for hours and talk to you and talk to the camera. Kai won't willing to do that
exactly.
At any moment, any time.
Exactly.
Yeah, big
so
jump
after
there.
That, we had many, great interviews throughout that period, and a lot of that stuff made it into the Redemption DVD. Kai really fleshed out some of his personal philosophy And I've personally found it very empowering. I've actually applied some of the things that Kai applies to bodybuilding. I've applied it to my filmmaking business here, and things have really grown in the past year or so just by applying this power of positive thought kind of things to the work that I do.
In the beginning of the video of Redemption, you see Kai, I guess that's at a seminar after the Arnold Classic win. Is that right? The day after the win?
Oh, that's right. It was the morning after. Yes, it was the all the champions each gave a little speech and answered some questions.
And you know, I tell you what, watching that, I don't know if it's your editing or what, but Kyrie is a really, when you let him stand up there and speak, he's really a good motivational speaker. You know, it's impressive to see him talk. You know, he doesn't. There's not a lot of and additional junk speech. He's slow and kind of methodical, and you know, it's like he's like a real motivational speaker. You know.
Well, yes, absolutely. You were looking at a guy who had just accomplished what he had set out to do, which is win the Arnold Classic a second time, and it was all pouring out of him. And I was breathless during that while I was recording that. I was like, wow, this is the guy that we want to see. And throughout Redemption, you see instances of where he demonstrates that he is a good teacher. And yet, when I asked him flat out about it, he says, no, I don't want to be a teacher at this time. This is not something I'm prepared to do. When the time comes, maybe I will, but right now, I have to focus on what I'm doing. And yet, you see him at Sean Ray's muscle camp, coming to life and doing a whole squatting thing, and actually sort of taking over for poor Evan Santafani, who barely got a word in edgewise. This guy was just doing the whole thing. And then we set up this other thing in Redemption where we have a young bodybuilder, a friend of mine.
That's one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when the young it's a young black kid. He's got that you say is actually comes from a totally different background as Kai.
Yes, he comes from not a privileged background, but a very middle class background, and he's going to the University of Pennsylvania and studying economics. You know, that kind of a kid.
Right.
But he lives in New York. He comes from New York originally, and so they have, you know, they come from almost the same place, but very different backgrounds. And I thought putting them together would be interesting. And really all Kai was supposed to do was give the kid a few posing pointers. You know, this guy's known for his posing. And so, you know, give the kid a few pointers. And as you see in Redemption, he took him through this all-day-long, specialized, grueling workout, which neither of us were prepared for. But it turned out to be really interesting. All these unusual, he's like getting in machines backwards.
And the kid doesn't want to quit. He wants, this is Kai Greene. He doesn't want to, do what Kai Greene tells him to do.
Yeah. And I put a microphone on his name is Jason. I put a microphone on Jason. And I was cracking up the whole time because I could hear him huffing and puffing like, oh, shit. Oh, damn. Oh, man. Okay, get up. Get up. Keep walking. He was really having a hard time. But I give him credit. I give him credit for letting me show that, first of all. And just for powering his way through it, because it was rough.
Yeah, they do a lower body workout. It's not like a typical workout. It's like Kai calls it a posing workout, right?
It is a posing workout meant to be done in addition to your regular muscle building routine, and it is a workout that
which
I've never
heard of before. By the way,
it's
not normal. I said, I've never heard of anybody doing that before. That's not like a normal, every bodybuilder does something like this. This is a
no, I've never heard of it. I've never heard of it either, yeah. And I don't think, I wish I could recall, he said he got it from someone. He didn't make this up. But it was a workout designed to train the connections between muscle groups. Like the connection between, you know, your thigh, the front of your thigh and your abs. So you're doing these, you're in the, for instance, this one particular one, you're in a leg curl machine backwards. So you're pulling up, you know, with your foot, the leg curl machine, if you can imagine that. And so that when you go and you hit that ab and thigh pose, they lock together. And the only analogy I can make, and I say it in the DVD, is because I used to be a musician, it's like playing scales. The more you play your scales, the more you create neural pathways your brain, so the less you have to think about it. When you need those skills in your hands, you don't have to think about it as much the more you practice. It's the same with this posing routine. The more you do it, the less you have to think about, is my thigh and ab tensed at the same time? Yes, it is, because I've done this a million times.
I want to talk a little bit more about the workout, but first we need to go to a commercial break, right, Carl?
Yes, we can go to a commercial break now if you want to.
Yeah, we'll do the commercial break. We'll be right back with Mike Pulcinella.
Hi, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit speciesnutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. Speciesnutrition.com.
Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. If you're stuck in a rut, looking to compete, want to make your mark in the fitness industry, or just want to look your best, Aaron Singerman can help. Sign up for 12-week, 24-week, or full-year training packages. All packages include training, diet, supplementation, and hormone optimization plans, periodic and regular phone consults, email communication, and text messaging included in all plans. Contact Aaron Singerman today at AaronSingermanFitness@hotmail.com.
LG Science's pre-workout performance enhancer Anadrolic State GT has grown exponentially in popularity in recent months. In July, Anadrolic State GT was named 2010 number one pre-workout product by BestRecovery.com, as well as nominated as best pre-workout product by Bodybuilding.com. We here at LG Science's want to give back to you, which is why, for a limited time, we will be giving customers a free 330-gram bottle of BC plus EAA hydrolyzed peptides with each purchase of Anadrolic State GT from bodybuilding.com. That's right. Order Anadrolic State GT at bodybuilding.com now and get your free BC plus EAA. Offer only available while supplies last.
Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit SpeciesNutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Mike, remember this song?
Oh, do I ever.
How old are you, Mike?
I just turned 49.
Oh, so you're young, man. Dude, you're younger than me. I can tell you what the fuck to do.
Whatever you tell me, I'm going to do the opposite, though. I've listened to your show.
Okay. Keep breathing.
Hey, that's not fair.
All right. Anyway, all right. Welcome back to Off Topic. We've got Mike Pulcinella on the show today. He is a cinematographer extraordinaire. He makes
documentarian.
He like makes bodybuilders look like human beings.
Amazing ability, yes.
When are you gonna do Aaron Singerman's story? He's great. The video goes like this: you watch Aaron sleep, he gets up and he eats, takes a dump, goes to the gym and works out, comes back and sleeps.
I play on the computer too. Don't forget.
Oh, I'm sorry. Play on the computer. That's right. Play on the computer and talk on the phone all day long. That's it.
Well, what he doesn't know is we've had hidden cameras in his house for a year filming the behind-the-scenes documentary of Aaron Singerman's life, and all of the footage is useless.
You're going to need at least a few more years. You're going to need a few more. Well, I wanted to ask you, Mike, about Oscar Arden. He's, you know, a guy we always see in the background in the movies and in your films. In the magazine, and is now on Flex Online. He's in all the Kai videos. You see him everywhere. What is your insight into Oscar Arden? What does he do? He calls him his teacher, his mentor, his coach. Who is Oscar Arden?
Oscar and Kai have a very close relationship, you know, that goes beyond the business side of what they do. And I really believe that one of Oscar's main purposes is the psychological part of bodybuilding. And as anyone who has tried it knows, is the psychology of process you go through is very difficult. And I'm trying to think of a delicate way to say this. I think that Kai needs that kind of support. He really needs it. I don't think he would want to do this on his own. I think he likes the fact that he's got someone to confide in and to lean on. And Oscar definitely understands, you know, the books that Kai has read and these principles that he speaks about, and that he's constantly reinforcing it. He's a strength for Kai. It's his strength. You know, in addition to whatever information that Oscar knows, you know, about diet and exercise and all, and I can't, you know, judge on that. There's a lot of people who are questioning that right now because of the recent Olympia outcome, questioning, you know, Oscar's abilities, and I can't weigh in on that. But in terms of psychologically, he's very necessary for Kai.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you remember, Mike, if you were involved with Kai at the time, but for a while there, Kai left, moved to California, and worked with Charles Glass, only to eventually move back, to start working with Oscar again, because Charles was not able to provide, from what I understand, Charles was not able to provide the kind of support that Kai requires.
Like emotional support?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I Charles trains his athletes. And that's pretty much it, you know.
Yeah, and he left you, right. He needed more social interaction with his trainer, maybe, or something like that.
Well, maybe, Mike, do you know the story behind this?
I don't know that much behind it. I do know that when he was out in California, Kai sort of really withdrew and really had, you know, had a tough time out there, really got homesick. Obviously, taking Kai away from Brooklyn is not a good idea. And whether or not, you know, whether or not Glass was being supportive enough is probably secondary to the fact that he just needs to be at home.
Right.
I know that being away was a big part of that problem when he was out there.
Let's talk about home a little bit. The only time I've got to see Kai's apartment is on the MD video that that Dave Palumbo did with Kai years ago. I don't know, in 2008. Have you had access to this apartment? And if so, why hasn't it ever been in the videos?
Why? What's the big deal about the apartment?
What, Mike, tell us, what's the big deal?
Well, there's no big deal about that apartment per se. I mean, if for anyone that I'm going to be making a documentary on, I like to get into the personal aspects of it, how bodybuilding affects your life. And the best way to do that is go to your home and just spend some time there and see how you live and how you interact with the people in that home. And of course, I've asked Kai many times, subtly and not so subtly, hey, let's, because I know he paints, so let's go see your paintings. Maybe we can get some of that on tape. And he'd be like, yeah, okay, and it just never happened. It never happened so many times that I eventually, you know, had to ask him, when are we going to do some of this personal stuff in your home? And in so many words, he sort of is drawing a line, I think. He's drawing a line of privacy because really, at this point, everything they do out in public, you know, these bodybuilders at this level is scrutinized. I'm rarely the only videographer there anymore. There's almost always somebody else or a photographer or something else going on. So imagine every time you go to the gym, there's just people snapping pictures and taking video and asking you questions. And so I think he's drawing a line of privacy that he doesn't want to have that part of his life for the forum members to pick apart. They can pick apart everything else, you know, the bodybuilding aspect of it, but leave his private life alone.
I got a question. Did Kai have the braids before he worked with Charles Glass?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe he picked that up from Charles.
Good question, though. Good question.
You're being sarcastic, aren't you? It is a good question. What if he didn't have the braids and Charles fucking gave
then
him the braids?
His beard grows incredibly fast. That would be a story.
There you go.
He's got
How many
long
years
ass
does it
braids.
Take to grow that?
Oh, got to be 15, 20 years.
You think?
Oh, for a black guy to grow hair, his hair is like, you see him at the Olympia this year, he had it like...
They're like 30 inches long, right? They're like 30 inches long each.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good estimate. I would say down past his midsection for sure, yeah. For a black guy to... growth, like, I mean, unless that's some kind of extensions, which I imagine.
Oh, wait, it could be, man. He could have a weave. Oh, shit.
Try to pull it out.
Kai, Kai, if you're listening to the show, do you have a fucking weave? You got to come on the show and talk about that. Come on. Come on, man.
I wish we could have him on the show.
Come on, brother. I'm from Brooklyn Bed-Stuy representing. Come on, cuz.
That'll get him on right there.
I am from Bed-Stuy. We could talk some good shit together. I bet you we know a lot of the same areas, too. He's a lot younger than I am, obviously.
Yeah.
How old is he?
38, 37?
Yeah. I think he's 35, 36. I think he's mid-30s. I'm not sure.
Maybe he's 36. Maybe not 37. 36, maybe. Maybe Jay's 38. I don't remember. Anyway, that's one thing I was curious about. You know, I listened to his... I know you probably don't listen to all his appearances and stuff, but, you know, he was just recently on Pro Bodybuilding Weekly before the Olympia, and then at the press conference, Bob was kind of hassling him, Bob Chicarillo, about his long answers. You know, he's very, you know, when you ask Kai a question, sometimes he goes, you know, off on a tangent or actually almost chooses not to answer the question and instead speak about another topic altogether. Do you get that? Or you think, I wonder if that's like just how he is or if that's because he's nervous, you know, being there up on stage and that's how he, is he always like that? Does he always talk around any kind of question you give him?
I don't think he's talking around. I mean, sometimes he may be talking around it, but generally speaking, that is the way his mind works. He's so thoughtful. He's got so many thoughts going in his head that when you ask him a question, he starts like way out here and tries to explain how he's going to approach the answer to that question. And 20 minutes later, you might actually get there if you haven't gone off on some other interesting tangent. I mean, it actually makes my job a little more difficult, but it makes it more interesting to just hang out with him. Because we've had conversations, you know, off camera that have just gone in all kinds of different directions, interesting stuff in all kinds of different directions, but would be impossible to edit down into anything coherent. You know, he's come from, this is my personal theory, he's come from such a, you know, he has such a lousy foundation. You know, his first, like, 20 years of his life were just terrible. Now, think about the first 20 years of your life. At 20 years old, we were pretty much, at least I was, ready to go out into the world. He was already out in the world and unprepared for it, you know, in so many different ways. And so since that time, it's only been, what, 15, 16 years, he's had to develop himself into the person that he is. He relies on those things that he's picked up along the way. Again, these powers of positive thought, for lack of a better term. So much so that that figures into the answer of just about everything, because that figures into everything he does. Am I making sense, or am I getting off on a tangent here?
Because no, that makes sense.
That's the only way I can explain it. So,
what do you know about his first 20 years? That's like a mystery. You know, people know he grew up, he didn't have folk parents, he grew up in a foster home, in a foster home system. What do you know about it, and why hasn't that been more prominently featured in some of the DVDs?
What I know about it is that when I press him about it,
he threatens to cut your throat.
No, he's the gentlest. He is.
I'm just fucking around. I know he's very, very. He's very cerebral. I know that.
He's very cerebral, just so sweet and gentle. He really is. I mean, I'm not saying that to you. I'm saying that to other people who think he's, you know,
yeah,
whatever. What was I saying? About his early years. So when I press him about it, the first thing that happens is he starts talking about it in the second or third person. He doesn't use the word I. He'll say things like, so you are living in an institution and you are doing push-ups to build yourself up because that's the only
he's disconnecting himself from it by using a third person. That's an emotional disconnection. He's purposely...
Defense mechanism.
Yeah, he's purposely disconnected. That's amazing.
And I got to the point where I actually asked him straight out. I said, do we want to include something about your early years on this next DVD? He thought about it for a second. He said, I'm not ready to do that.
Yeah, good for him. Let him keep that to himself. You know what? There are certain things in life that you have to keep to yourself. That's it. You know what? That you can't give your public everything. You can't give them.
Yeah,
anything.
But don't you think, Carl, that makes his story that much more inspiring?
Look, we know that he had a tough life. You just need to know that. You don't have to know the details. It's like you don't have to know all the details of it. It is inspiring already. What about the story that somebody told us Who told us? The guy from Texas, didn't he tell us the story
Lee,
about
Lee Thompson? Told
yeah, that he went when he went to someplace in the Northeast.
The
Northwest.
Colorado. He did a show.
Yeah, he was broke. He said, "If I don't win the show, I don't get home."
He said, "If I don't win the posing award, he came for the posing award."
Yeah.
He won the $5,000 posing award.
And if he didn't get that, he has no way home. I mean, that's inspirational right there. A guy who's put, I mean, when you you pull out all the stops.
Lee Thompson said he went backstage and Kai was hysterically, you know, like crying like he had won the contest. You know, like Ronnie when he won the first Olympia. And he said to him, "What's wrong? Are you okay?" And he said that you know, he had came all this way. He had no way to get home if he wouldn't have won the $5,000. And he didn't know what he was going to do. He couldn't pay his bills. And he had no way back. So that was a good story.
Yeah.
So he's keeping the home life stuff to himself.
So far, yes, he is. So far.
You need to do some like investigative journalism.
Couldn't bring it out of him.
Oh, really? No. Oh, well. Maybe like the fourth or fifth DVD, right?
Maybe.
Because obviously there's a third. Let's talk about what happened at the Olympia. You were there. You were there filming for two athletes, right?
That's right.
Give us Las Vegas
Victor Martinez for a while as well.
Right. Tell us from your perspective. You get to Las Vegas. What happens?
I get to Las Vegas, and well, as usual, you don't get access to Kai Greene before the show. Anytime. I didn't get it at the Arnold Classic. He just locked himself away. He apologizes through Oscar, and he says, "Look, this is the way I do things. You know, no interviews, no nothing. So you don't really get to see him." That's his thing. So I didn't get to see him at all. I did get to visit with Victor, you know, just right before he's ready to go down to prejudging. He let me in, and I sort of walk down to prejudging with him. And so basically my experience with the Olympia starts backstage as the show is beginning. Because I really didn't get anything else beyond that, except, you know, going to the expo and things like that, just like everyone else.
Right.
Well, you know, I was as shocked as anyone. And I'm standing backstage, by the way, and I'm actually shooting from backstage. I'm not getting a real good idea of what people look like out there and what the comparisons look like. All I know is that the first call-out gets called, and my two guys aren't in it at all. So, you know.
You know bodybuilding enough now to know what that means.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My brother's taught me enough to know what that means, and it's devastating. And so I have to keep my wits about me, and I'm still trying to shoot, you know, their reactions. And I have to admit that Kai did a pretty good job of, you know, covering up whatever reaction he was feeling, you know, and being a good sport about it. But I was like, oh, what are we gonna do? But you know, you don't stop shooting. I went through the whole thing, and I got some great footage. Great footage, but I don't know what we're going to do with it, because you certainly can't make a DVD that ends on a low note like this for either one of them.
Kai gets
so we're
seventh
sort of
place.
In limbo. What's that?
Kai gets seventh place, right?
That's too low of a low point. He only got seventh place. So, I mean, that's you can't do anything with that, right?
Even if like maybe it come in second or third, you could sort of make something out of that. But it just was so limp, so lame that you just can't stop there. So we're going to continue to film with both of them and see what happens at the Arnold and maybe even at the next Olympia next year. It may go that long because you have to end on an upswing somehow.
Did you get to, with Kai, did you get to do a post-Olympia interview?
I have not gotten post-Olympia interview with either one of them yet, and I've tried.
I got to say something real quick. Lorena Gamboa. That's it. Okay. Go ahead. Move on.
Thank you for that call.
Okay.
No, I was going to say that at the Superstar Seminar on Sunday, Kai is now an AMI Weider athlete, and he wasn't at the AMI Weider Superstar Seminar, so I imagine he must be pretty upset to skip the seminar.
You know, I didn't get an interview with him, a formal interview, but I was there when he came out of the auditorium after prejudging. Pretty much everyone had gone.
You said he waited an hour before he came out, huh?
At least an hour, and they had to go in and get him. And understandably so. And what he he came out and he sort of sat there on the curb with us, and we were all, you know, commiserating with him. And he started talking. And he basically,
do you have this on camera, Mike?
Of course.
Okay, good. Okay, keep
going. Are you kidding? And he basically said, I don't quite know how to handle this because I pictured a certain outcome so completely for so long that I feel adrift. I feel adrift. I don't know how I'm going to handle this over the next couple of days. I don't even know how I'm going to come back here tomorrow and do what I have to do because this is so not anywhere in my plan to be here where I am right now. And he, you know, he felt literally cut off and adrift, and he was struggling to make some kind of sense of it. That's what I've seen so far.
Well, it'll be interesting. I'm sure you'll get an interview with him eventually, huh?
Yeah, eventually. He has to talk about it to someone eventually. I'd like it to be me. You know, I'm pushing for it to be me. I'd love to get the exclusive first interview with him and Oscar and Victor. And I would hope that I've had a relationship with them, you know, that's been long enough that I can get that to happen. I'm trying.
Well, before we get too far and too close to the end of the show, Mike, I wanted to make sure I asked you. Some of the fans want to know, why does it take so long for these damn DVDs to come out? Everybody's waiting for them. They've been waiting for the Redemption one for a while now. Why does it take so long for them to get out?
I know. It's tough. The Redemption DVD is actually at the duplicators now. They're making the copies. And anyone that is interested, I will be posting all over the place when they're finally ready. And there's no one more than me who wants them to come out faster. I mean, when these things come out, I can sell them, I get my fee from Muscle Meds and all that kind of stuff. So the process to make these things the way that I do it is just so time-consuming that it just takes that long. I would love to have had these things ready for, you know, for the Olympia. But with all the shooting and everything else that I'm doing, it just takes that long. I mean, you figure I have to make, like, say, 27 hours of footage, right? 27 hours that my computer is occupied just downloading the footage to the computer where I can't do anything else. That's to start off with. And then you have to go through it and pick it apart and, you know, and find the connections between things. Because as you know, I try to make a sort of a continuous story out of it. And it doesn't always flow that easily and sort of have to juggle things around to make it work. It just takes time. If I was just making a straightforward, you know, exercise video and instructional video, that would be a hell of a lot easier. But we've sort of got ourselves in this situation where, you know, I've sort of set a certain standard for myself where you expect a certain thing when you see my video. And so now I have to live up to that. And all I can say is it just takes time. I apologize, you know, to anyone who's really waiting for this thing. But I am doing my best to get these things out and because I want you to see them.
Of course. How many times do you have to watch the 27 hours of video to actually formulate a plan and start putting it together?
How long before I start putting it together?
How many hours of editing? Is that what you're asking? How many hours of editing?
Yeah. I mean, approximately, obviously.
Uncountable. I don't even keep track because I was afraid if I did,
you'd never do it again.
Wage,
yeah.
I would realize my hourly wage comes out to about 27 cents an hour.
Right.
It's really uncountable. At this point in my life, I'm rolling out of bed at 8:30 in the morning. And with maybe a break to go to the gym and make food or go to the supermarket or something, I'm sitting at this computer till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, every day that I'm here, that I'm not out on a shoot. That's what I'm doing right now.
Wow. But on a positive note, that's all you're having to do now, right? The last time we talked to you about Kai Greene Overkill, it was like you still had, I guess you could say, a day job. Now you've been able to...
Did you say a gay job?
Yeah, like he hasn't before. He
oh, you mean a day job, like with a D, not gay
no,
job with
a
G.
Day job.
He probably was gay
he
too.
Said a day
though.
Job, but you heard a gay job.
So that, you he was doing gay, he was doing gay
Carl
for pay.
Carl was being wishful thinking on Carl's part.
Yeah, I was going to come and visit
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
He's like, "Where do you work at this place? How can I patronize this?"
Hey, now, I'm at the point where I'm barely at the day job, which was a family printing business. I mean, literally, I think I worked there 4 hours in the past 2 weeks, and they begged me to come in. I mean, I'm pretty much gotten this rolling to the point where I'm able to do this full time, just about.
that's lucky.
And when I, you know, when I talk about how long it takes and how I'm sitting in front of the computer all day and all night, look, trust me, I am not complaining. This is not a complaint. It's just a fact. It just is. You know, I asked for this, just like Kai Green says. You ask the universe for something long enough and hard enough, it's going to give it to you, and so you better be prepared for that when it comes. And so I was prepared for this.
Carl, did you have a question?
No, I really didn't. I already asked the question about Kai's braid. No, Kai's braids. That was the one
you had prepared.
I worked on that for hours, actually.
Can we start talking about sexy nuns again?
Yeah, I got something to contribute then. What the fuck do I know about bodybuilding?
I got something for you, Carl. Mike has some new, some personal life limbo that he wanted to talk to you about, or that I wanted him to talk to you about.
Okay, let's hear it. Come on. Wait. Mike, you got to do it like this.
Yeah.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 2 months since my last confession. Come on.
You call confessional.
Come on. Do five Hail Marys.
It has been 27 years since my last confession.
I thought you were going to say 27 years since your last erection. That would be a problem then. So what's the deal, Mike? What do you need my help with? Come on. I'm here for you, bro.
Well, you know, my girlfriend of 4 or 5 years we've separated, like we were married or something. We're separated. We're still talking from time to time, but we're separated because, and it basically boils down to this, Aaron. She's not sure if she still wants to have a family, either have her own children or adopt. And I'm fixed. I've been
I gotcha. Okay. But you can get unfixed if you want to.
Well, yeah, but, that costs, first of all, it costs like $10,000. It's not.
Is that what it costs,
insurance.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I looked into it. When we first started going out, we talked about it, and I looked into it. $10,000, not covered by insurance at all. Not by mine, anyway. Not guaranteed. And I know somebody that went through it, had all kinds of swelling in that area, horrible side effects, and
right.
It didn't work. So that's my
experience. Yeah, okay, so that's not an option. So she's thinking that maybe she does want to have... But see, here's the problem I have with this whole concept, right? If you love somebody, that's exclusive of now I want to have children. If she loves you, she should stay with you and find some other fucking alternative. Because you don't abandon somebody because you decided you wanted to have children if she loves you. That's what I'm saying. Okay? So I don't buy that. There's something else going on here. You know, because worst case scenario, you could say to her, look, you want to have kids. I can't give you a kid, but I'd be glad to raise a kid with you. I'll let my brother fuck you. Okay? And he'll knock you up. And it's pretty close, same DNA. You know what I mean? So same gene pool at least. And we can have a kid. What the fuck?
There is no way I'm going to raise my brother's.
I mean, you don't have to worry about him falling in love with him. He looks like a fucking Cabbage Patch doll. His face. I mean, you know. So you don't have to worry about that. You're good. You're the good looking brother. You know.
Oh, that's not saying much.
No, but the truth of the matter is that you know what? Love is one thing, and her desire to have children is another thing. And if she really loves you, she wouldn't fucking be doing this right now. She'd be because women when a woman loves you. She'd be like, we can adopt. That's fine. Let's adopt. You know, because I want to be with you, and that and the but, child is a different issue.
But I don't even want to adopt.
Oh, so you don't want to have kids at all?
No, look, I'm 49 years old, right?
Right.
I have a grown daughter. She just turned 20 the other day.
Right.
I'm doing this.
Yeah,
I'm
you did.
This.
You did it all already. Yeah, I gotcha. Well, didn't she know that when she got into the deal?
Actually, you know, the whole videography thing evolved in these past 4 or 5 years. So it really wasn't.
No, but didn't she know that you didn't want to have kids when you start dating?
I don't, to be honest with you, I don't think I was strong enough about it. Like, we did have conversations about maybe we could adopt and that sort of thing. I don't really think I was leading her on, but we did have those kinds of conversations. She knew that I had a vasectomy, so that was off the table.
Let me ask you a question. Were you having these conversations where you may not have been clear before you had sex with her or after? Because quite often when women ask these questions before sex, guys are like, yeah, I can roll with that. That's fine. Yeah, you know. And but then after sex, it's like, oh, fuck, I don't want to have to do that shit. So, really, it's very critical to know if these conversations were, you know, preceded by sex. But anyway, I would say to you, you love her?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. So, you have to kill her. You can't let her go off on her own. You have no choice. That's it.
No, I want her to be happy no matter what she does.
Well, then let her go have babies with somebody else, and that's it. You answered. Hey, you know what? I just realized we're at the two-hour mark, and that can mean only one thing.
We gotta go.
We gotta go. I'm sorry. I don't mean to rush through your problem, but no. Truthfully, if you really love her and she wants to go have babies, and that's really her destiny, then and you don't want to have babies, then you gotta let her go. You got no choice. That's it.
But you brought me to this point, and now I'm all destroyed, and I need more counseling. And you're going to end the show?
No! I told you what to do. If you don't want to lose her, then you have to kill her. You get a taxidermist in the neighborhood who's a good guy. You stuff her. You keep her in the fucking house, and then every time you walk past her, you go, "Huh, kids? Tell me about kids now."
That's Aaron, all. I'm so glad we had this conversation.
Never mind that. Tomorrow morning he's gonna have a fucking EPO out against him for this conversation. Oh, that's funny. No, let her go. Let her go have babies. Let her see what she's fucking missing. Wait until she's got to change diapers in the fucking middle of the night for the 3 fucking years. You know, wait till the kid's 21 years old. He comes back with a drug bust and she's got to fucking pay for the attorney. Then she'll think, wow, you know, Mike was really smart. I should have listened to him. Anyway, give the website where people can get your DVDs, please.
MikePulcinella.com. And you look me up on Facebook, and I put all sorts of clips up on Facebook and announcements about when things are coming out and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, check out his Facebook. Check out the whole Pulcinella family. They're all over Facebook. Joe's in Italy right now. Brother Dave is fornicating with some woman on Facebook right now.
Of course,
so check it out. Brother
Dave is fornicating with a Jewish girl.
Yeah, he's going to be mad at me that I referred to him as a Cabbage Patch doll now, isn't he? I was just looking at a picture of him a couple minutes ago with Fittadina, and I thought, Jesus, he looks like a Cabbage Patch doll. I never realized it before.
You'll definitely.
I have told him.
He's probably going to break my jaw when he sees me.
I told him to his face, you are not good looking enough to have had as many women as you've had.
Nah, but he's charming. Your brother's charming. He's very charismatic. He's very charming.
That is the thing.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for coming on the show tonight.
Father Mike, thank you for coming on, and I'm glad
Father Mike, can you talk to Jesus for me? All right, have a good day, bro. All right, and we'll see everybody next week at our regular time, so tune in then. Aaron, you want to say goodnight?
Good night.
Good night, and may God bless. We're only making plans for Nigel.